change your mind, and you'll change everything. Welcome to Nathan's School of Thought.
Hello, my friends. Most of you know that I grew up in a really musical family. When we were in the car one time, my parents decided it was time to teach us how to sing harmonies. My younger brother, a year younger than I, who was probably 4 or 5, and I, who was 5 or 6, learned the harmonies to songs like Home on the Range or I See the Moon. I sang the second soprano part, he sang the alto part, and that's just kind of how those assignments went until we were much older. In fact, I didn't hit puberty until I was a junior in high school. Maybe sometime I'll do a podcast about the bullying I endured, still singing second soprano, the beginning of my junior year. But I was good at it, and we could harmonize very well, and as younger siblings were born and grew a little older, they would do it with us, and so our family sang all the time. I can remember a family tradition when I was in high school. On Christmas morning, before we opened presents, we would sing the Hallelujah Chorus from Handel's Messiah and do it from memory. Why? Because we could. Because it was a beautiful piece of music, and we just happened to have the right number by then of tenors, basses, altos, sopranos to pull it off. Now, in doing this, we learned to harmonize, of course, without looking at music. At that age, I'm not reading a piece of music to try and figure out where the harmony is supposed to be. I would listen to what my mom or my dad sang, repeat it back, and it immediately made sense to me. I could just do it. Over the years, it got to where I could harmonize with anything, anytime, very easily. When I took piano lessons, my piano teachers refused, after a short time, to teach me. Why? Because I would listen to what they played, and the next week I would come back and play it. They would get really irritated that I was doing it by ear. It became abundantly evident to me, even when I was fairly young, that I needed some language for what I was doing. I began to understand that music theory was the language that I could use to describe what I was hearing and feeling to someone else. And it's the language that I could read to play their descriptions of what they felt, what they heard, and what they had created. Learning to read music was an important and impactful thing in my life. As I got older and began playing in bands and things, it would get really frustrating to me if I was trying to explain to somebody else what was supposed to happen, and they couldn't make it happen. I played with a guitar player for a while who was a great musician, could play lots of stuff, lots of fun to be with, but if I ever said, actually, it's A flat minor and a C in the bass, I may as well have said the whole thing in Japanese. That didn't mean anything to him because he hadn't learned that language. That meant that he couldn't describe to me what he was picturing, nor could I describe it to him other than trying to imitate it myself. I didn't play guitar. It would have been a hard thing for me to do and a hard thing for him to understand. Over the years, I've played with lots and lots of musicians, some well-educated in music theory and some not. You can guess which were easiest to communicate with. In the world of music, we use chords that create what's called consonance. That's C-O-N-S-O-N-A-N-C-E, consonance, versus dissonance. Consonance is when a chord is created that sounds beautiful and stands out as something that produces a feeling of satisfaction or relief or release of tension or power, something like that. Those are consonant chords. Dissonant chords are combinations of notes that make tension or fear or anxiety or that wind us up a little bit. If you watch a horror movie, right before the monster strikes, the music that's playing is always dissonant. If you're watching a movie and finally the couple gets together and they share true love's first kiss and the music soars and rises, that's consonant sound. One positive, one stressful and often described as negative. In the early 1960s, an anthropologist and psychiatrist named Robert Levy spent 2 years on some islands in Tahiti. The people on those islands didn't really have a language, They didn't really have words for some things. They didn't have words for grief or sorrow, for example. And so if they were asked how they felt, they would describe themselves as feeling sick or feeling strange. But they wouldn't say, I'm feeling sorrowful, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling grief. Those people had a really high suicide rate. And Levy believed it was because they lacked the words and the rituals that would help them cope with something that they couldn't even describe. Some Amazonian tribes and some groups in other parts of the world don't have words for numbers. These are intelligent, capable people, but they can't describe numbers other than with vague, non-specific words like a few or some. There are some coconuts. There are some beans. So how then can they understand or describe quantities? I couldn't tell them, I need 30 of these, and I'll pay you. Our world is run with numbers. We talk about numbers all the time. They don't. Populations like this are referred to as anumeric. One experiment with an anumeric group involved a researcher putting nuts into a container one at a time. The researcher then took the nuts out one at a time and asked the person watching to signal when all the nuts had been removed. Anumeric people had trouble keeping track of how many nuts remained in the can, even if there were only 4 or 5 nuts to begin with. Language influences our capabilities and our ability to describe them or interact with others. Some experts say that if you learn the language or the vocabulary of any occupation, you actually qualify yourself to do that for a living. If I know the vocabulary for oil drilling, I could probably do it. If I know the vocabulary for pharmacology, I can probably do it. Knowing the vocabulary for things changes our capability. But when people lack words for something, it's often unimaginable to them. Without a word for it, some things just don't exist. We're often unaware of the things that we can't describe, but we're also hyper-aware and overly influenced by those things that we can describe or those things that we say too often, especially if they're negative. Our language dramatically influences our life experiences. Words have power. One of my daughters married a very good man. Well, all of my daughters married very good men. One of my daughters, who married one of those very good men, was speaking negatively about herself one time, and her husband quietly but firmly said, "Please, don't ever speak that way about someone I love." I thought that was one of the most sensitive and beautiful things I've ever heard. And she thought so too. So what do we do about the harmony in our language, about the music of our soul? What do we do to create that, to understand it, to feel the consonants, to feel the harmony, to describe it to others, and to describe it to ourselves? What can we do to make sure that the music in our soul is something that lifts us, not something that drives us down? Well, I'll give you a little exercise and this will help. So today, don't do it tomorrow, do it today. You know you have time. You don't have to binge watch the entire show tonight. Give yourself a couple of episodes. Today, write down on a piece of paper some things you say about yourself. Now, to do this, you may need input from someone you trust. It's surprising how many times we say things about or to ourselves that we are not aware of, even when they're very negative. So write a list of the things that you say to and about yourself. There's no shame here, just reality. As you do this, write some of the circumstances in which you say those particular things. Write down what you have said to or about yourself in the past, and what you think you might say to or about yourself in the future. If you want to really have fun, make a list for those things you say about others, especially those closest to you. Then, as you look at the list, mark those things that are difficult to describe. So there may be a negative sentence or a negative thing that you say, or a phrase that tends to come out every time you're in a certain situation. Sometimes we're not describing our emotions, really. We're not describing the situation, really. We're just sort of venting. We're just sort of letting some emotion out without identifying what it really is. So your next job is mark the things that are negative and write the word that best describes the emotion associated with them. For example, someone might watch a YouTube video that has a political opinion and just go off. They might go on their customary rant about this particular topic. If I were to ask that person what emotion they're feeling, they would say anger. But if we spent some time on it, I'm willing to bet you a few bucks that the emotion driving that is fear, not anger. See if you can identify what emotions are driving the words you use. Then, see if you can create a positive variant. Be very careful and selective about the emotions that you use in the new arrangement of your thoughts. If you're prone to go on a rant and you identify the negative emotion as fear, see if you can create a positive variant that is a response to that video that triggered you on YouTube. I am concerned about this, but I know that. And then come up with some positive thing that you can do, understand, feel, or say about your response to that video, or the options and opportunities that you have available. This is work, by the way. It's not supposed to be easy. So when you sit there for a minute and just scratch your head, yeah, I got you. You're supposed to do that. Then pay attention to how it feels and to how your body responds when you rearrange your words into the powerful, beautiful consonant chord in that symphony in your mind. What you say or describe will influence your future, your physical, spiritual, intellectual, social, and emotional health. It is inevitable. So you get to decide which version of those you want. In the music of your soul, do you choose beautiful consonant harmonies, things that blend well together and produce love, confidence, satisfaction, power, anticipation, glory, strength, accomplishment, and similar things? Or do you choose dissonance, things that break, things that produce anxiety, fear, concern, frustration, or a feeling of darkness? You're the composer. You get to choose. I have spent a lifetime creating, performing, or arranging music. That's a language in which I am quite fluent. Similarly, I am quite fluent in the language of the mind and can help you rearrange the music of your mind. Let me know how and when I can help you realize the symphony in your soul. To get hold of me, simply go to natewalkercoaching.com and in the contacts area, tell me how I can help you best. There are things that I can do for you. You are capable of more than you believe. Please share this podcast with friends, loved ones, and associates who might benefit from it. We'll talk again soon.